Now, we're talking about fish elevators. You heard that right. Sturgeon are a unique fish in Lake Michigan. They're the size of human beings, and they can live for 150 years. Their numbers have dropped over the years, though, due in part to dams being in the way of their historic spawning patterns on the Menominee River. But thanks to the Fish Passage Project, a partnership between the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Wisconsin DNR, the EPA, power companies, and others, sturgeon are able to get a lift, literally, upstream to lay their eggs. In the process, researchers are using their DNA to track their success and population numbers. We've got two guests here. Rob Elliott is a fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service based in Green Bay. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Keely. Thank you.
And Patrick Forsyth is an associate professor of biology at UW Green Bay, focusing on aquatic ecosystems and fish populations in the Great Lakes. Patrick, good to have you with us.
Hi, Keely. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Patrick, let's start out with some context. Give us a sense of what's happened with the sturgeon population over the past few centuries.
Well, it's a really good question. Most reports will indicate that lake sturgeon have declined substantially across the Great Lakes. And right now they're at perhaps around 1% of their historic abundance. And so, historically we used to have a lot of fish swimming around out there. But, because of pressures like overharvest and pollution to our rivers and what we're going to talk about today, which is hydroelectric facilities and dams on rivers, their abundance has really declined over the past couple of centuries.
And this is a fish that has cultural importance, especially for Wisconsin's Native American tribes?
Yeah, of course. It's sort of interesting. I think a lot of people sort of know that sturgeon had a very historical significance to Native American populations for subsistence. I've heard reports of Native American tribes actually tracking sturgeon migrations. But what's really interesting to me is that these same Native American populations also used to really hold the sites where sturgeon spawned as very historic and significant cultural locations as well. And they would also view the size of the spawning run and the success of their harvest as being sort of a telltale sign of things to come. And so when sturgeon numbers started to decline, there's an obvious connection between, things that were potentially not, going right for the sturgeon populations, but also potentially for what was happening upstream.
So, Rob, I have to say, I'm not sure I've thought of fish and elevators in the same sentence before now, but we've built them to make sure that sturgeon get to spawn, I guess, sort of normally. Tell us about this process.
Right. Well, elevators have been used for a long time to move fish above barriers, and in this case, dams. So it's not that new of a technology, but it is new for the use for sturgeon in the Great Lakes. So this is really the first elevator that's been built specifically for sturgeon in the Great Lakes. And there's a number of things that need to come together in order to make a river or a location ideal for building an elevator. And one is which you want to have enough sturgeon that are coming back that are being blocked at a dam. And the Menominee River just happens to be one of those cases where it made a lot of sense. Sturgeon exists still in naturally in about 8 rivers around Lake Michigan. But as Patrick mentioned, these populations are quite low compared to their historic abundance. But when the dams were built on the Menominee River, there were a number of sturgeon that were probably living in the river upstream, and sturgeon historically were able to move up the Menominee River about 80 miles to Sturgeon Falls. So that was their historic furthest upstream extent. And when the dams got built, a number of sturgeon remained in the river above the dams or in between the dams. And so those sections between the dams, if they were long enough, 30 miles or so, that was enough for the sturgeon populations to persist. But over time, a few sturgeon every year would move downstream, and that was sort of a one-way direction. So over time, sturgeon started to accumulate in the furthest downriver section of the Menominee, which had access to Green Bay. But when it came time for the sturgeon to spawn, they were only able to move upstream a few miles. The first dams were built 2.5 miles upriver from the mouth, and they were not able to get above the dams back up to maybe where they were born or where they originated. So this was a river that had a large accumulation of sturgeon below the first dam, but there was still good habitat upriver for the sturgeon to progress. A lot of the other rivers around Lake Michigan, the first dams are quite a bit further upriver, 20 to 50 miles. And so there is still plenty of habitat for those populations to slowly recover on their own, which I should add, they have been doing gradually over the last century. You know, the sturgeon populations were really wiped out in the late 1800s. And just because of their life history, long-lived, slow-growing, late maturing, it only took about 20 years for human settlers to pretty much wipe the populations out. So they went from millions down to just thousands. And
Rob Elliott is a...
time, they've been able to hang on for a long time.
Right. So now we're trying to undo a little bit of the damage. Rob Elliott is a fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service based in Green Bay. Also talking with Patrick Forsyth, who's an associate professor at UW Green Bay, focuses on ecosystems and fish in the Great Lakes. And Rob, we mentioned that sturgeon are pretty massive. Is it difficult to handle them when they come through the fish elevator?
Well, the whole process keeps them in the water the whole time. So when they come into the elevator, it lifts them and the water up about 20 feet and then spills the water into a holding tank. So the fish are always in water. If you try to grab them when they're in the water, they're not tired. So, yeah, they can be a handful, but the whole process intends to keep them in the water the whole time. So they go from the fish elevator into a holding tank, from the holding tank into a transport trailer, all the time staying in the water. The transport trailer then takes them upstream an additional mile, and that's only because there's two dams that are very close together, and it was easier to pass them around both dams at once rather than having to build two fish elevators.
Sure. Patrick, you're also gathering DNA from the sturgeon as they pass through. How are you using that to track the fish and whether it's spawning?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the questions that the overall project had was, you know, once the sturgeon are moved upstream, will they stay upstream? And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that they will. And then the follow-up question is, will they go all the way up, you know, to where they're intended to go, back to their roughly their historic spawning locations and reproduce successfully? And so to answer that question, we're able to use genetic techniques to be able to tie a parent to an offspring, to a larvae that we collect in the spring at the time that spawning happens. And so, you know, 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, the genetic technology wasn't really there to be able to do this. But now we have the ability to tie the parents to the likely offspring that they've produced. And so it's been a huge advancement to the project and to the question. But it starts with the elevator. And so, you know, we keep moving fish. We have the opportunity to try to tie those parents to successful reproductive events, which is really neat.
And sturgeon don't spawn every year, but so far, Patrick, are you seeing encouraging signs?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of encouraging signs, I would say, related to my portion of the project. Number one, this past spring, we were able to successfully catch enough larvae to run the project, or, you know, to be able to tie the parents to the larvae. And, you know, in addition to that, we were able to document that some of the fish were likely up there spawning with some other radio and acoustic telemetry techniques. So once we get through this spring or this winter and we're able to run the genetic analysis, we feel pretty confident that we should be able to find a few larvae that were produced by the fish that were passed with the project, with the elevator.
Yeah, this project has a lot of different groups and agencies involved. Rob, how did everyone feel about helping the sturgeon spawn? Does everybody realize its importance?
Yes, this has actually been a very long effort. Hydropower dams go through relicensing periods, and it was on the schedule about 15 years ago on everybody's radar that an opportunity to implement fish passage at this dam was coming up. And so the two state agencies that are involved, Michigan DNR and Wisconsin DNR, a couple of NGOs, River Alliance of Wisconsin and Michigan Hydro Relicensing Coalition, were involved, as well as the Fish and Wildlife Service. And then Key is a willing hydro owner, and in this case, Eagle Creek Renewable Energies. And they could see the strong benefit of passing sturgeon at these two facilities. And so they knew it would be best for them to be on board early on, which allowed us to also seek outside funding. So it didn't all have to come from the hydropower company. You mentioned EPA's involvement. They've been instrumental in providing funding through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. there's been a number of grant sources. The Great Lakes Restoration Fund was also instrumental in helping provide funds for this. So there have been a number of partners. And I should also mention the research projects have brought in additional partners. So Patrick's at UW Green Bay. UW Stevens Point's also been involved in two previous research projects. So we're kind of working through a step of a number of important research questions. We're now on project number three, and there's a fourth one further down the road, assuming everything continues to go well.
Excellent. More to talk about. Rob, thank you for your time.
Sure.
And Patrick, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Rob Elliott and Patrick Forsyth talked with us about the Fish Passage Project on the Menominee River. It gives sturgeons a lift in an elevator, a checkup from researchers, and a ride down a water slide to help them reach their spawning grounds upstream.